Brought to you by Modelo.
On this recording. What up, brawlers? Welcome back to Throwing Hands. It's me, it's Toby, and we're live streaming today, coming at you with a new just a new way to do this. You know, Toby, what's up? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I like it. I'm a fan of the live streams. It'll probably make things a little bit easier for you, so that's good.
Yeah, don't have to upload the video itself. It's just going out there to the people. So UFC 298 has just occurred. I don't know, man. Lots to discuss. I think we should go from the top down because I think we got to switch the format up a little bit on these. I feel like people want to see the main event, the co-main, you know, when it comes to the review first, and the opposite when it comes to the preview. That's kind of how it works. But so we're gonna head on over and look at some good stuff. Oh, stop the share. Hold on. I think I might have accidentally shared the wrong screen. But nothing popped up, so we're cooking. All right. And boom. It's going to share right now. All right, there we go. So, yeah, we're going to start from the top. Alexander Volkanovski, I'm not going to say I predicted this, but I kind of did in the preview. I said second or third round knockout for Topuria. And that's exactly what happened. Volk was looking good, chopping it up from the outside. I think he threw more kicks in this fight than we had ever seen him throw. He clearly saw something with that left high kick. I think he saw what Jai Herbert did, but that's perfect. You can't compare that to anything else. And I think we learned if Topuria puts you up against the cage, you might as well say goodnight. It's a wrap. We were discussing this just moments ago. I don't think Volk's chin is too shot, to be honest. Because he's never really had a great chin in the first place. But that head kick would have put anybody out from Islam. And that overhand right, or a hook from Topuria, would have put anybody out too. And the way Topuria set that up was beautiful. He moved two steps to the right, got out of Volk's eyesight, line of sight, and just landed that thing. And we have a new champ. I think Topuria is the next big thing in the sport. What, I don't know. You take it away.
Yeah, no, I thought Volk actually looked pretty good in that first round. Like you said, he was going for that lead leg high kick and that lead leg body kick, which I thought was a smart move. Like you said, Jai Herbert landed that on Topuria. And I thought, you know, Volk was trying to make a good read there. But Topuria just, you know, he had the counter for it. He was able to kind of bait that kick out of Volk, but then just slide right out of the way before the kick actually landed. And Volk also did a good job in that first round of staying off the fence. But clearly in the second round, he got caught up against the cage. He didn't have anywhere to go. His feet were, you know, planted straight forward. He couldn't roll with the shot at all. And yeah, I mean, I think that shot would have put out most people. I think even if Volkanovski were 10 years younger, I think he would have gone down from that shot. It's a brutal knockout, and it's a really brutal way for Volkanovski to, you know, kick off the year here. But yeah, it's a tough spot. I mean, I agree with you. I think Topuria is definitely going to be a superstar. For all the things that he said before this fight, he backed up literally everything. I think that the Conor call out is like, you know, I get it. Everybody wants to call out Conor when they become champion or when they win a big fight. But I think there are a lot of other interesting matchups for him. And Conor, I don't even know if he can make lightweight at this point. But yeah, all credit to Topuria. I mean, he's got great fundamentals when it comes to boxing, wrestling, and grappling. And he puts everything together super well. His feints are incredible. I mean, Volkanovski, we know how good his feint game is. And Topuria might have even outdone him a little bit. I think he had Volk really hesitating, had him confused a little bit in there. So it was a fantastic performance.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said there. And the fact that It was just, it was sad. And you know, Volk is the longest reigning, what was the longest reigning UFC champ by a mile. Leon Edwards is now the longest reigning UFC champ. If any of you guys are curious as to who is now, which is kind of crazy to think about, in my opinion.
Yeah, because Volk won the belt in what, like 2019,
December of 2019.
And Leon got it in August of 22. So that gives you an idea of, you know, I mean, yeah, Volk had that belt for a long time.
He did. And I saw this stat on Twitter. It was every champ in featherweight, there's only been five, 92-7 won at the time they got the belt. 92. Yeah. And like, that's mind blowing.
It's incredible to look back at the history of featherweight in pretty much every champ. I think once it's all said and done, Topuria is going to be like this as well. But pretty much every champion at featherweight has a claim of being the best featherweight of all time. Now, people can gripe about like, oh, well, Connor, this and that. But you look at Aldo, you look at Holloway, you look at Volkanovski, they all have a very legitimate claim to be the greatest featherweight of all time. And like I said, Topuria, I don't know who's going to beat this guy at featherweight. I mean, truly, a guy like Ortega, no. A guy like Yair, you know, he could catch him. That's an interesting matchup. Out of all the guys that I see, I think Yair is probably the most interesting matchup, at least as of right now, until we get a guy like maybe Diego Lopes or something in the next year or so comes up, gets on a nice run. But as of right now, I think Topuria is going to hold this belt for a while.
Yeah, you make a good point there. And I think we talk about, you know, you see a lot of people in the comments going, Holloway's era is next. You know, Holloway's finally going to get the belt back. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sorry. We'll see what happens against, if Holloway gets TKO'd by Gaethje or something, there's no way he's beating Topuria. I think Topuria hits harder than Gaethje. Gaethje just kind of piles it on. I'm not saying he doesn't hit hard. The dude can crack. But Topuria is so dynamic. If he can't get in on Holloway, you just take him down.
It's kind of surprising to me that people are so confident that Holloway would be the one to take out Topuria, because, you know, Holloway, yeah, he has a great chin, but he gets hit in pretty much every single fight that he's in. I mean, even in the last fight against the Korean Zombie, who is pretty washed up at this point in his career and was in that fight, he got cracked a couple of times by TKZ in that fight. You look at every single previous fight that he's had, he has been hurt, or if not hurt, he's been cracked a couple of different times. And I know people talk about, oh, he's got an iron chin, it's never been cracked. We're going to reach a point where you're going to face someone at some point in your career and your chin's going to get cracked. Mm-hmm. And Ilia Topuria is the type of guy to crack anybody's chin. I don't care how good it is. Topuria can do that to you. And it's not just the fact that he is powerful. It's the fact that he combines the technique and the tactics and all of that, and the well-roundedness along on top of that power that makes him so dangerous. I think that Topuria is actually a terrible matchup for Max Holloway. And I would favor Topuria against Holloway much more than I had him over Volkanovski.
Yeah, and you know, we'll talk about this in a minute, but we have Merab and who's probably going to be the next bantamweight guy. But if Sean O'Malley beats Chito Vera, I see Sean moving up, because that's the biggest fight the UFC can make right now. UFC Topuria might be the biggest star in the game right now outside of Conor. Toby, I don't even think I'm exaggerating there, simply due to the fact that he's a European champion.
Maybe
Sean Strickland. But, you know, Real Madrid posted him on their Instagram page.
He's definitely up there.
The post has 2 million likes almost.
I think he already has, what, like 2 point some million followers before he even became champ?
He gained about a million followers this week on Instagram. This guy is the next big – he's already a big thing. And I understand the Conor call, because that could be a big fight. But if Sean O'Malley defends against Chito, which I'm doubtful about personally, they're going to make that fight in Spain. I don't see it any other way. There's no way it can't happen.
They should. Yeah, that'd be a great fight.
Because there's no clear featherweight contender. If we look at the ranks, I think – I want to say John Morgan propose the question at the press conference. If not, it's not a big deal. It's not a bad thing to mix up. But the question was, who do you see next? And so I think he brought up Movsar.
Movsar,
Topuria made an interesting point. 8 fights in the UFC, 8-0, 8 decisions, and 4 split decisions.
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to finish somebody. And I can't necessarily blame Topuria for saying that. So there's no, I don't think Ortega needs to fight and win 3. I don't care. I don't, most inact, yeah. He shouldn't even be ranked, in my opinion.
No, Ortega's got a long way to go.
People can say, oh, John Jones is hurt. Don't compare the greatest to this guy. Because I don't really, John Jones can stay in the rankings as long as he wants. I don't care. Yair, I think he's got to get 1 or 2 wins to get back into the title picture. And we'll find out this Saturday when they fight each other, which that's going to be a great fight. That should be the main event, not Moreno and Royval. I'm sorry. That's just my opinion, but they're both great fights. And we'll talk about them. I'd love to see a healthy Bryce Mitchell.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe give him like 2 years off after that. Yeah,
you've
got to
give that dude a lot of that was a career altering knockout from Josh Emmett, man.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, really, there's a couple of interesting matchups. I mean, if Max survives against Gaethje, then Max would be interesting. If Yair beats Ortega, I'd be very interested, actually, to see Yair fight Topuria, just because of the styles in that one. And then Movsar, you know, I would be somewhat interested to see that fight. I just think that Ilya is probably better everywhere than Movsar is. But, you know, yeah, he's on a good win streak, but he hasn't really got any finishes, like you mentioned. Kind of like the same thing as Bilal. And we know how, you know, it just Helwani reported today, and take that, you know, for what you will. But he reported today that the UFC offered Leon Edwards Khamzat, Shavkat, and Islam. No, they did not offer Bilal. So,
who are all observing Ramadan.
Ramadan. Exactly. Which is... I'm not sure what the UFC was thinking on that, but
back to Volk and Topuria real quick. We'll talk about that later for sure because we need to talk about that. But I can't believe what was that tweet I sent from like Patty Pimblett earlier about how Patty was, you're gonna be on the prelims and stuff like that on my card. Patty, come on, man! Like this, he's bigger. He's the one of the biggest guys in the UFC. And yeah, I'll give you go.
No, go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, like, Topuria just beat one of the pound-for-pound greatest fighters we've ever seen, and Patty just beat Tony Ferguson, who's on a 7-fight losing streak. So that kind of didn't even finish him. So that kind of gives you an idea of where these guys are at in their career. Oh, and the fight before that was Jared Gordon, which he lost, by the way.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. I see Topuria being an all-time great. I really do.
27. I mean, come on.
He's not even in his prime. That's the scary part. Only 15. I mean, the only time we ever saw him in trouble was with the one of the greatest timed head kicks ever.
Yeah. Yeah. So, speaking of, and that's a good segue to the co-main if you want to.
Great. Yeah, let's do that. The good one. Shout Ilya Topuria, man. But how this didn't win fight of the night is criminal. I'm not gonna say Lemos and Dern was a bad fight. That was a good fight. There were some moments there, and we'll talk about a couple things that occurred in that fight. This was amazing. Paulo, did Sal D'Amato give Robert Whittaker the first round?
I don't know. I can't
Someone
remember.
Someone did. There's no way he won the first. He was almost out cold and on his feet.
Well, I don't know how he ate that kick. I mean, that was about as flush as you can get.
Especially Robert Whittaker.
Yeah, that's the craziest part to me is it's so weird how some shots will put a guy down and you're like, wow, it didn't even look like that big of a shot. And then you take a flush spinning heel kick off the temple or from maybe Costa. Even just off the jaw from Costa and he eats it. It's like, what? But hey, shout out Rob Whittaker, man.
You know, for a year and a half off, I thought Paulo Costa looked really good.
Fantastic.
I think if he just stays active, I think this dude can get back to the top of the division. And Robert Whittaker looked good after that. His second and third rounds looked fantastic. I thought he looked phenomenal. That second round was pretty close, but third round, he started to pull away a little bit. His jab was true the whole fight, and I'll give this to Costa, man. I don't know how he throws his leg kicks, his kicks up so fast for how big he is.
It's incredible, yeah.
What a fight, man. I think Whitaker and Strickland's the fight to make.
Yeah, good fight.
And Paulo, I don't know, man. I still think he deserves to fight up in the rankings. I'm down for a Vittori or a Cannonier fight with that guy.
100%. I think, you know, for all the extracurriculars involved with Paulo Costa, all the things that happen outside the octagon. I mean, look, he's a good fighter, and he brings it every single fight. You know what you're getting into in a Paulo Costa fight. You know it's going to be a war, or he's going to put you away. I mean, I thought he looked very good in this fight against one of the most talented guys in the division, in Robert Whittaker. I thought he just looked sharp. He looked quick. He looked incredibly quick in that fight.
Yes.
Almost maybe even quicker than Whittaker, who is a very fast guy. And Whittaker, too, I thought he looked fantastic coming off a rough loss to DDP. The jab, like you said, was looking good. I thought the leg kick was really, really nice from Whittaker. I thought he actually looked pretty powerful in this one. There were a couple of right hands that he landed on Costa that seemed to have like a visible effect on Paulo. And that's not something we see too much from Whittaker. Of course, we see it when he lands that head kick, like he landed on Cannonier and Gastelum and Souza. Yeah, like we, you know, of course he can hurt you with that. But when he's just throwing his regular combinations, his boxing combinations, he's not really a guy that's going to put you away, at least not recently.
No.
And he looked like he was stunning Costa a couple of times. Not that he was like rocked and falling all over the place, but some of the shots seemed to be having an effect. And yeah, I thought Whittaker displayed incredible toughness after being finished in his last fight with, you know, a jab set him down. He got hurt really bad. To come back in this one, take the shots that he took, fight through it, bring that dog out of him. Clearly, this was fight of the night. Like you said, no disrespect to Dern and Limoges. Good fight as well, but this was far and away the best fight of the night. I was thoroughly impressed by both men here.
Paulo Costa is incredibly durable. I don't know what happened in the Adesanya fight, but man, he didn't look fazed by the leg kicks at all. It was pretty phenomenal. Shout out Paulo Costa, man. He looked phenomenal. Shout out Bobby Knuckles too. We don't have Bobby Knuckles around much longer in his prime, maybe. So enjoy the tail end of his prime while you can, or unless he has like a second win or something. But I'm just keeping it real with you guys.
You never know.
Never know. I mean, Robert Whittaker's been in the game for so long.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look for a sec. And he's only lost to champions at middleweight. He's a phenomenal fighter. Phenomenal fighter. Yeah. Great. Dang, I wish he got to defend.
Incredible resume. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's beat
fight Bisping.
Yeah, he would have slaughtered Michael Bisping.
Yeah, he probably would have. I'm sure Bisping would admit that too.
It is one of the biggest black marks, like the biggest stain, and one of the biggest stains in UFC history is the fact that they gave Dan Henderson, number 13 ranked contender Dan Henderson, who beat Hector Lombard, completely washed up Hector Lombard, they gave him a title shot over Robert Whittaker. Let that sink in for a second. And by the way, Dan Henderson dropped Michael Bisping twice in that fight when he was like 44. And he had been on like a 3-fight skid and then won against Hector Lombard. Like,
Hector Lombard.
Come on.
That's just one of the weirdest things. Yeah.
And then he fought GSP.
Yeah.
And then he lost.
Yeah. And then he got sent to another dimension by
Gastelum. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oof, that was a rough one.
Anyway. Hey. Jeff Neal won this fight. I don't care what anybody says, bro. Jeff Neal won rounds 1 and 2, and it was somewhat apparent to me. I don't know what you think, but what do you think, Toby?
I don't know. I thought Ian Garry did enough to win this one. I think Jeff Neal, you know, remember when we were doing the preview, I said that Jeff Neal makes a lot of mistakes and he has a pretty low fight IQ. And we saw that in this fight where he could have, and he did many times actually, push Ian Garry. Well, I shouldn't say many times, but a couple of times he pushed Ian Garry up against the cage. He grabbed a collar tie or some form of a clinch. He was throwing elbows, knees. When he got him inside, he was having real success. And then he just stopped doing it. It wasn't that Ian Gary figured something out and was able to counter him on that. Jeff Neal just decided that he wasn't going to do what was working for him anymore. So I'm not sure what he was thinking in this fight. I think Jeff Neal lost just based on poor decision-making. I don't think Ian Gary looked particularly good. I think that Jeff Neal just didn't implement a good game plan. And I think it's really on Jeff Neal, because we know Saif Saud is a really good coach. He's we know how good game plans he can implement. And for whatever reason, Jeff Neal just couldn't execute it. Ian Gary, yeah, I mean, that's two performances in a row where he hasn't really looked overly impressive. I mean, the Neil Magny fight, you know, he landed some nice leg kicks, but he couldn't get him out of there. Same thing here. Couldn't get Jeff Neal out of here. I mean, I wasn't overly impressed, but it's a win's a win. So
yeah, a win's a win. I don't want to talk about this anymore, so we're going to move on. Merab, man. Cejudo won the first round. I don't even think it was very... There's not much debate there. But Merab dominated rounds 2 and 3.
Yeah.
There's not much to say here, I don't think, because this is... I think I said Cejudo was a good win, but I'm not surprised. This is how the fight went. Yeah, Merab gets the next title shot at bantamweight, even though I think he should have wanted to fight Aljamain. That's just my opinion. I understand where he's coming from, though. But
in the post-fight interview, like when he was getting interviewed by Rogan, was I mistaken, or did he mention... I thought he said something to the effect of the UFC never sent us a contract, referring to him and Aljo. And he said something like, but if they did, you know, maybe I would consider it. Like, maybe we would have to fight. Or I thought he said something like that, but I could be mistaken on that. But I could have sworn he mentioned that he might fight Aljo if the contract was there, but I'm not sure.
I think I recall something like that coming along Twitter as well.
But yeah, in regards to the fight, though, I mean, this is another one where in the preview, I mentioned something that I feel like not a lot of people were discussing, which was the cardio of Henry Cejudo, which I had some questions around. And we saw in that second round, Henry looked winded. I mean, he looked very tired after that first round. And I'm sure that's partly due to Merab just keeping a torrid pace in every single fight. This guy has probably the best cardio in the whole UFC, so I'm sure that had a factor. But Cejudo, just, I didn't think the cardio looked great in the last one. It didn't look good in this one. There were a couple of big moments for Merab. It was a good performance by Merab. I mean, I thought he had moments. It wasn't spectacular, but when he picked him up, ran him across the octagon, you saw Zuckerberg with his like weird clap, like whatever he was doing. That was interesting. But I mean, Merab, he's a fun guy. He's a character. His fights are not the most fun. Like the Aldo fight in particular is really terrible, but you know, he's a fun guy on the microphone. So yeah, I'm interested in him fighting O'Malley.
Yeah, I am too. People were saying we're kind of dogging Dana White about not letting Henry Cejudo retire. I'd say it, but I kind of agree with him on that. He had his moment almost four years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, he did the whole thing and that just to come back.
Yeah.
I see where he's coming from. Personally, I would have let him say something.
Yeah.
But I kind of agree with Dana White, because I wouldn't say that I agree with him, but I completely see where he's coming from, and I'm not going to dog him for that.
I think Dana also does have a bit of animosity towards Henry, because he was really blindsided. If people remember, when Cejudo retired after the Cruz fight, Dana was really pissed off because Cejudo had mentioned it to nobody, like not even his coaches, I don't think. It was just out of nowhere. He was like, I'm retiring, I'm done. And that really threw a wrench in things for the bantamweight division at that point. I think Dana just got pretty heated after that. Now, I will say, though, you're talking about a guy who was a simultaneous flyweight and bantamweight champion, and he is one of the few to actually defend both belts. He defended the flyweight and the bantamweight belt. So regardless of what has happened previously, I think that they should have given him a little moment. I mean, he's one of the greatest athletes we've ever seen in this sport. So, but yeah, like you said, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I don't care too much.
Yeah. You want to talk about this, man? I know this was probably hard for you.
Yeah, so Like I said before the fight, you know, Roman Kopylov is just super overrated. His takedown defense sucks. I mean, this guy, everybody talks about Kopylov, Kopylov this, Kopylov that. I was telling you guys before the fight, look, don't put any money on this guy. He's trash. He's never going to be in the top 15 in the UFC. Okay, but seriously, though, yes, very disappointed. I actually thought he looked pretty good in the first round.
He did.
I thought that those body kicks were there. He was landing beautiful body kicks. I was like, yes, just a few more of those and Fluffy's going to go down. The left straight was looking clean. I thought he looked great. The takedown defense was on point. But I should have just listened to everybody else. And because what most people were saying was Kopylov is going to look good in that first round. And then Fluffy's just going to wear him down. He's going to take him to the ground. He's going to choke him out. And I was like, no, Kopylov, his takedown defense has improved. And it has improved. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's
for sure.
Yeah, it's much better than it used to be. And his submission defense is much better than it used to be. But I think Fluffy is just a very suffocating grappler. He's a great wrestler. And he actually has better boxing than I gave him credit for, and he mixed it in well. So all credit to Fluffy in this one. I thought he actually looked really good, a lot better than I expected. Kopylov, I don't think is done by any means. I think that he still has a bit of a hole when it comes to the wrestling and grappling, but yeah, I think both these guys have a bright future. I'm really excited to see what Anthony Hernandez does next. I think he deserves a top 10 guy.
I completely agree. Let's take a look at the top 10. Jack Hermanson, Roma Dolidze, we got some options. We got some options. Paul Craig would be a fun fight.
It would. It would. And you know what's interesting for Fluffy is that you look at the top of this division from Strickland to Adesanya, Whitaker, Cannonier. All those guys at the top of the division are not grapplers. They are primarily strikers. So
Duplessis can grapple, though.
Yeah. DDP can't grapple, but still primarily a striker, I would say. But if you just look at the top of the division, there are some favorable matchups there for Fluffy, I would say.
Same with Vettori. Paul Costa can grapple. He just doesn't use it. That's the thing. The Duke can grapple.
I would actually, I'd love to see this would be a big step up, and I'm not sure the UFC would do it, but I think Fluffy versus Brendan Allen would be a really fun fight.
That would be pretty awesome, actually. All right. Lemos versus Dern, fight of the night. We don't agree. Here's what it was a good fight. Oh, it was a great fight. Not great. It was pretty good. I thought the fight should have been stopped when Dern covered her face, and I think Lemos hesitated just a little bit. I think no one would have disagreed with that stoppage because Dern literally went like this. She literally put her hands on her face.
Yeah, her face was like this. It was horrible. It was a bad reaction.
I kind of remember Lemos just hesitating a little bit.
It reminded me of
when Rory McDonald got hit in the face.
Yeah. There. I was going to say it reminded me of when Chito Vera hit Rob Font with that lead hook kick, and Rob Font went down. He was like, just fell onto his back, if you remember that, in like the fourth or fifth round of that fight.
Yeah, I mean, that fight could have been stopped after the fourth or fifth knockdown, honestly. Yeah. But, you know, shout out Amanda Lemos. She looked great. You know, we all thought Dern was going to be this next big thing. No, that's pretty broad. A lot of MMA fans thought Dern was going to be this next big thing. I don't see it. She's I know she outstruck Angela Hill, but I kind of feel like that was just a one-off thing. I mean, Dern's jiu-jitsu is second to none in pretty much all of women's MMA. But if she can't get you to the ground, and if there's someone who throws good straight punches like Lemos, granted, I think Lemos was knocked. She wasn't knocked down, apparently. But Dern got a couple good strikes in there. But there's no – I don't see Dern just – I don't know. If we look at the rankings for strawweight, Marina Rodriguez, straight puncher. Janjidoba, I think Dern and Janjidoba fought, and I think Dern won that fight. Andrade, she can crack. We found out. Lemos, same thing. Tatiana Suarez, that would be interesting on the ground. Zhang Weili, I think, would destroy her on the feet.
Her, yeah.
So, to me, there's no room for Dern to, like, in anyone above her, really, for her to beat. Like, it's a tough road up for her, I think.
Yeah, I had no clue that Virna Jandradova was the number five contender in strawweight, but shout out to her. I mean, hey,
Yeah, man.
good for Jandradova. Maybe she'll get a
Yeah.
title shot soon. But no, I mean, Mackenzie Dern, she still has the problem, which she's had throughout her entire career, of she just bum rushes forward. Like she just charges straight at you, flailing her arms. And it's like Juliana Pena in the second Amanda Nunes fight. That's what happens to Mackenzie Dern in pretty much every fight. She'll run at you with her hands down. If you just know how to throw a pull counter, that's it. Just a simple pull counter, you will drop her. And Lamoche dropped her a couple of times with that. I thought her wrestling looked it looked pretty good. She had a nice takedown or two against Lamoche. She had good control as always, and we know how good her grappling is. Like you mentioned, she's a world-class jiu-jitsu player. There's no question about that. And you mentioned too the Angela Hill fight. The thing with Angela Hill though is that she is the definition of a coin flip fighter. I mean, you look at Angela Hill's UFC career, it's win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. So I think that was just one of those ones where Dern came in and Hill just had, a bad performance, or maybe Dern just had a spectacularly good performance that night. Either way, her striking has not really improved over the last several years.
She needs to join a real team. That's what she needs to
Yeah,
do.
exactly. She needs to join a real team. I mean, her offensive wrestling hasn't improved nearly as much as it should have. For someone who is so focused on grappling, someone like her, like Paul Craig, all these people. For whatever reason, many of these jiu-jitsu specialists don't feel the need to work on their doubles and their singles. And I'm not sure why. If she just had good wrestling, she wouldn't really have to worry too much about the striking. Of course, she should cut back on the charging forward with her hands down. But if she had that really, really good wrestling, it would make her so much more dangerous. But for whatever reason, maybe it's just she doesn't have a stable camp behind her. She hasn't been able to figure that out.
Yeah, bizarre.
Oh, and I will mention too, Lamoche was making me a little bit angry in this fight because for whatever reason, she decided to take Mackenzie Dern down multiple times after she was. I wouldn't say Dern had any submissions that were close. I mean, she was working through positions well and was dominating on the ground.
She
But
swept Lemos at one point.
yeah, and she swept her at one point. And then Lamoche decided to re-engage. And in the one area where Mackenzie Dern has an advantage, Lamoche is like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to engage with her in that. And I'm like, it just was
I
not
mean, I wouldn't do it myself, but I don't think Lamoche really put her in any put herself in really any truly oh my gosh, this is not looking good. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. But I guess my point would be is if you have a clear path to victory and if you have such an advantage over someone on the feet, then why even engage on the ground at all? It's like you look at the fight below this one, Rogério de Lima against Junior Tafa. De Lima had Junior Tafa fighting on one leg. I mean, he was a one-legged guy in that octagon. And De Lima decided to take him down and try to ground and pound him, try to finish him on the ground. The dude was hopping around, could barely stand. And De Lima's like, yeah, I'm going to take him down. What? Like that makes no sense. So
Yeah.
it's just one of those things where if you have a clear path to victory, just take that path.
Yeah, and then Rogério, great transition. Rogério de Lima eventually did just take that path and beat Junior
Exactly.
Tafa. Not much to talk about here, honestly. Not surprised it got to this point
I was
because
the only thing I was surprised about was it was what, like one kick that he landed that destroyed his leg, like one or two maybe.
I mean, it hit perfectly. The leg was dead. I saw the kick. It was
Yeah.
right behind the knee. Beautiful placement by De Lima.
Yeah.
It's really it for that fight. Nothing crazy. If anything, this Rinya Nakamura fight versus Carlos Vera fight proved that specialists are dead in this sport. Carlos Vera, especially against someone like Rinya Nakamura, who's an, if he, I'm pretty sure the story is, don't quote me. Well, quote me on this, but I'm not 100% sure if I'm right. He had made the Olympic team for Japan. Then, because the Olympics got pushed back due to the pandemic, he had to try for the team again. And he didn't make it. Especially a guy of a caliber of Rinya Nakamura, I don't think he Nakamura's bad enough to put himself in a terrible position against another grappler, even though his main thing is wrestling. And people were booing this. I'm like, dude, I think Rinya Nakamura is gonna could be a champ in the 35 division. I'm not gonna say, oh, it's gonna happen, but there's not many grapplers in that 35 division where I'd be like, Oh, this you could so this person give Nakamura problems. He's an Olympic level wrestler. I don't see how I can, you know, maybe someone submits him, it catches him, but outside of that, his ground game is probably better than second to none in that division, and his stand up's not half bad. So I think Nakamura is going to find himself in the top 10 or top 5 by the end of the year.
Yeah, that was a fantastic performance by Nakamura. Carlos Vera, you know, look, he is what he is. I mean, he was throwing those spinning kicks and he was trying to fall on his back. And it, all right, I will say, at least he did not butt scoot. I was very happy about that because we have seen butt scooters in the octagon before. And Chrome Carlos Gracie. Vera, yeah, Chrome Gracie. I mean, to my knowledge, Claudio Pugliese, to my recollection, Vera did not do that in this fight. So good for him. But it was not a good performance. Yes, he is BJJ or bust. And there were a couple of times where I was like, maybe he's getting a little close. But you just look at Nakamura and the way he flows through every position, there was no – you could look in his eyes and just tell that he had – there was no danger at all. There was never a moment where he was like, oh, man, this might be deep. Oh, I'm in trouble here. He went from position to position beautifully. He had, what, like 13 minutes of control time? Plus, he was landing some strikes. I mean, Nakamura dominated this fight. I thought the wrestling was great. The grappling was great. The striking even looked pretty good. I thought this was striking against a guy like Carlos Vera, you should look pretty good. But all in all, I think Nakamura, like you mentioned, is a very good prospect in this division.
It's exciting stuff. Very exciting.
And probably the best division in the UFC already. To get another guy like this is just absurd.
There's not too much more I want to talk about. You got anything? I would say
good knockout by Zhang in that one. I thought, you know, that was a solid finish that he got. And then Danny Barlow, I was actually really impressed with Danny Barlow. I think he's got a bright future in that division. He's a super tall, lanky welterweight. He's got a piston of a left hand, and his defense is really solid. I mean, he's one of those guys who is able to just get out of the way far enough of punches to where he doesn't get clipped, but he's still in range to counter you. He does a perfect job of that. I think Danny Barlow is legit. I know Josh Quinlan, you know, not exactly like a super high level guy, but Danny Barlow, this was his UFC debut, you know, after the Contender Series. So I think that I was really impressed by his performance and the fact that he broke his arm in the fight in the first round and finished Quinlan with that arm. So incredible stuff.
Yeah. Miranda Maverick looked pretty good. She looked pretty good.
Solid.
I don't know where her place in this division is. It's really weird because she. I'm trying to remember what, you know, she's won two of her last three, right? Four of her last five, rather. Mazo, Young. That's not a bad loss, Blanchfield.
Yeah, losing to Blanchfield. Yeah.
Don't. She's a dog. She kind of hovers around that 15-16 position, and right when she's about to move up in the rankings, she just can't pull it off. I mean, she is a huge, I think you'd agree with me, she's a huge flyweight. She's a huge flyweight. Mm-hmm. And I don't see Maverick staying at 25 much longer simply due to the fact that she's a yoked 25.
Yeah, I don't know if she can. I don't know how much longer she physically can. Yeah.
Yeah. She doesn't look too bad at weight cuts or anything. So that's what, you know, once we see that, we'll be like, okay, it's about to be that time. But, you know, if she can stay at 25, there's not many people that can outmuscle her probably. She just needs to, she doesn't fight too often. I think that's the thing.
Yeah. So, and I will say too, not for Maverick, but for Andrea Lee in this fight, man, was I disappointed. And she just could not pull the trigger in this one. And you're talking about someone who, if I'm not mistaken, Andrea Lee is on a bit of a skid right now. And this was, you know, her back's against the wall and she needed to pull something off here. And she just could not pull the trigger. So I'm not sure what was going on, but she was very hesitant and it was not a great performance from her.
I mean, Miranda Maverick's a dog, man. I do think she has a future in this division. She only fights about twice. You know, if she can get that one up one more, you know, fight two or three. I mean, she didn't take any damage in this fight. You know, she looked great after the fight. Apparently, she sells pickles. I mean, they were hammering that. Hey.
Yeah, they said that like a dozen times.
Toby, I have an idea. I think during you know, a week where there's no fights, we gotta order a couple jars of pickles and try them on camera.
Yeah, might as well. I mean, the way they were hyping them up,
they better
I
be
kind of want to try them.
Miranda Maverick, I'm looking at you.
Miranda
man.
Maverick is, she probably got a lot of business from that. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, she probably, there's a lot of people that
she's
went
an impressive
and bought
person. She was in a PhD program. Apparently, she stopped that. I mean, if you're a full time fighter, I mean, come on. Like,
well, they were saying too.
Josh
Quinlan, they said that he had a bachelor's in mechanical engineering. I didn't realize that so many of these fighters were like super smart. But hey, shout out to them.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, crazy. Toby, we gotta discuss something, man. I'm getting tired of Rogan's commentary. It's he really hammers home things that don't really matter.
Yeah,
and here's where I think it is. He comes in the day of the ceremonial weigh-ins, I think, and he's not present for the fighter meetings. I think that's a huge thing for commentary. And he was all over Ian Garry. The way he made it sound, he made it sound that Ian Garry was kind of winning this fight handily, even though I don't agree.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man.
Yeah, it was weird, definitely, especially in the Ian Garry fight, because it would be one thing if Ian Garry was like tripling the number of strikes in every single round and he knocked Jeff Neal down multiple times and he was dominating clearly. It's like, okay, yeah, if you want to talk about how great he is and all this stuff, sure. But this was just kind of a mediocre performance where he skated by and got a split decision win. I mean, you know, yeah, it was a close fight and he won it, so good for him, but there was no need to talk about how like this guy is such a high level striker. I mean, this is, we've never seen anybody like, you know, all the things that he was saying.
He does
in this
it
fight
all the time.
Yeah, he does do it all the time. So I don't know. And yeah, Rogan has a knack for bringing up irrelevant facts that, like, especially things that happened like 20 years ago. And Rogan to me just seems like he's stuck in the past. He doesn't do his research for current fighters. He's always just bringing up super obscure old fights or like some random, he's like, oh, maybe you could pull off the like some choke that nobody will ever do in the UFC. He's like, oh, you might have this choke right here. No, they won't, because nobody's ever going to do that choke in the UFC.
Well, the one thing that stood out to me when he was doing commentary was Blachowicz versus Adesanya. And he mentioned that Blachowicz fought at 85. He never fought at 85. I knew that.
Was that the same fight
for this podcast?
Was that the same fight where they were like, Blachowicz is eating these feints right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he does.
Well, by definition, you can't eat a feint. But
Blachowicz
okay.
was doing the same thing that Topuria does, and it was taking a step back, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah,
and
that fight too was so egregious, because Blachowicz won that fight what, like 4-1? I mean, it was pretty clear that, I mean, it was clear that he was winning too, and they were like, "Oh, it's really close."
Blachowicz looked great on the feet against Adesanya too. That was a great performance. Shout out Blachowicz, man. What else? It's just and John Anik calling Volk. They're all calling Volk the greatest featherweight of all time, and it's how it's undebatable. Otto's the greatest featherweight of all time, and I don't even think it's close. 9 defenses of the title.
Look, man, I think personally, I might still consider Max Holloway the greatest featherweight of all time. I know people can say, like, oh, how can you say that Holloway's better than Volk? Volk beat Holloway 3 times. Well, Holloway beat Jose Aldo 2 times, and Conor McGregor beat Jose Aldo. So it's like, we can do this whole, like, oh, who's better than who? Who beat who? We're talking about resumes here, people. Okay. And resume wise, probably Jose Aldo, I would agree with that. Personally, just me for the fun, like the excitement, who I liked best as a champion, who I thought was the best champion, was Max Holloway. I thought his reign was something special, truly. So for me, it's probably still Max Holloway. And Volk definitely has a great argument. He has a case for being the greatest featherweight. But to say that it's, and this was like every other sentence, like the consensus greatest featherweight of all time. What consensus? When was this consensus reached? Because I didn't get
you and
a vote
I have
on
a
this.
Different answer.
Like, yeah, exactly. So I'm not sure who was voting on this, but yeah, that was kind of annoying. And I understand too, they're trying to sell the fight, right? They want to make it so when Topuria wins, they're like, wow, he just beat the consensus greatest featherweight of all time and it looks better. I understand that, but it was getting a little bit annoying. Also, let me just say this, John Anik, you don't have to use the word proverbial every time you say something like, oh, like that was a proverbial shot in the dark. I know he's not actually shooting something in the dark. I know you don't mean literally a shot in the dark, John. You don't have to say the word proverbial, okay? He always says that.
He says that word. I never thought about that. He says proverbial a fair amount. But hey, well, John Anik's the guy, man. I love John Anik.
Yes. I want to take nothing away from John Anik. He's a phenomenal commentator. Don't get me wrong. Very, very good.
He's great. I got to give this. Bisping might have been the best guy at the desk on Saturday. And that's the last thing I ever expected to say.
I think Bisping was focused. That's the best Bisping is a focused Bisping. You know, when he goes off on tangents
can't
with
him
DC.
And Cruz at the desk together.
Him and Cruz or him and DC. It's just not compatible.
Look, I've said this on the show umpteen times. Fitz, Bisping, and Felder are the best commentary trio, and I don't care what anybody says. You learn stuff. It's funny. Shout out to Fitz for also coming on the show a few years ago. I got to hit you up again. But that's just my opinion. I don't know. That's my opinion. One more thing we should cover. Oh, right. UFC 300 main event, Pereira versus Jamahal Hill. You know, for as hyped as this announcement was getting, I wouldn't say I was disappointed, but I feel like DDP and Adesanya was more of the answer. I don't know how bad DDP got hurt in that fight. But I mean, Pereira wants to defend the belt again 23 days later. But here's the thing. If I think on the feet, Jamahal Hill in the division is the most threatening to Pereira simply due to the fact that he can put anybody's lights out at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for that fight. I'm not complaining. Like that's the fight. I personally think they should have just put Holloway and Gaethje as the main event for 300. I don't think anybody would have been disappointed. But the bout Gaethje and Holloway are the first championship fight, quote unquote. I think it should be the second one up. That's just me. Not to take anything away from Zhang Weili or Yan Xiaonan, which I fully expect Zhang Weili to do her thing. Shout Zhang Weili. People are kind of dogging that card for no reason. It's a great card.
No, it is a fantastic card. There's a few things for me about UFC 300 that are a little bit bothersome. Like for one, the main event, when I saw that fight was announced, I was like, okay, that's a banger. That's a great fight. But that's a co-main. On UFC 300, that's a co-main event. That's not the main event. I'm sorry. Alex Pereira and Jamahal Hill should not be headlining UFC 300. It's as simple as that. The second thing, Yan Xiaonan against Zhang Weili, why are they not doing that on the UFC China card? They're literally like the two biggest Chinese fighters in the UFC. And they're talking about, we're going to go to China. We're going to have this big pay-per-view. Why not put the two Chinese fighters headlining the UFC China card? I don't understand that.
Why didn't they save? They did not save any of these Brazilian fighters for the Brazil
for
card 3 weeks later.
It makes no sense.
You have Andrade and Rodriguez, but they want to see them.
Yeah,
Diego Lopez. Or why didn't they put Diego Lopez on the Mexico card? I know he represents Mexico too.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense. Davidson Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt, that could open up the pay per view.
Yeah, and also, what is up with the UFC? They're like, we're going to offer Leon Edwards three Muslims during Ramadan. And they, of course, they all denied it because it's Ramadan. They're fasting. They're not, I mean, you would have to be very brave or very stupid to take a fight when you are fasting. You know, so they offered him Islam, Shavkat, and Khamzat, which is, yeah, I mean, does Khamzat Chimaev really deserve a title shot at welterweight? I mean, I guess since he beat Gilbert Burns, he is, you know, technically he's still a, like, top contender there. But it's kind of hilarious that they didn't offer Bilal a title shot. But at the same time, objectively speaking, Bilal definitely deserves a title shot. Do I want to see him win the belt? No. But just objectively, does he deserve it? Yeah, probably. But, I mean, if they gave it to Shavkat, I wouldn't be complaining or anything.
You know, if Shavkat had would call out fighters and had a little bit more I don't think Shafkat has no personality, but you know what I mean. If he was more expressive, he'd have a title shot already. There's no question.
Oh yeah, 100%.
In my opinion, I mean, Shafkat's the boogeyman of that division. As I think he'd destroy Khamzat. I really do.
I agree. And hey, let me give a huge shout out to Leon Edwards. He accepted not one, not two, all three of those fights. He accepted every single one. So shout out to Leon.
Yeah,
that's huge. I mean, that's crazy.
I truly don't think the UFC wants Bilal Muhammad to be the champion.
Oh, absolutely not. I can't blame
them. I can't say I blame them.
Yeah, that's a pay-per-view killer right there.
But.
Oh, and then,
I just can't. I couldn't. I would get out of bed for a Bilal Muhammad pay-per-view event.
Absolutely not.
And I think Leon Edwards takedown defense. I don't see Bilal Muhammad beat. We saw what happened in the first fight. And I'm not saying the same thing would happen again. But Bilal Muhammad's 35. He's not getting any better, probably.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be a pretty brutal fight for Bilal Muhammad again.
Oh, and I agree.
Leon Edwards is so much bigger than Muhammad. That's one thing I noticed watching them fight. Leon Edwards is huge for the division. I don't think people realize Leon Edwards is not a small 170 guy.
He's a big
pretty
guy.
Big.
Yeah.
He didn't look small against Usman, I'll say that.
No. Well, he's got the most aesthetic physique in the UFC. There's no doubt about that.
I mean,
have you seen all those videos of?
Yeah.
It's like, here's why Leon Edwards has the most aesthetic physique in the whole UFC.
He's freakishly symmetrical. That's one
he
thing
is.
I know.
He really
it's
is.
It's not normal.
He's got like literally perfect proportions on every part of his body, which is incredible.
It's not normal.
I forgot to mention too, I think people, I've been saying this for a long time. You can go back and watch previous episodes if anybody out there wants to. I think Jamal Hill is severely underrated. I think that people are sleeping on Jamal Hill. I'm not saying that he goes out there and beats Alex Pereira. I'm just saying for all the people who say it's a wash, Pereira's going to destroy him. He's going to knock him out cold.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, let's see what happens because Jamal Hill is a very clean striker. He can mix in the wrestling if he needs to. He's been improving every single fight that we've seen him in. He is quick for, despite his, you know, he carries a bit of weight on him, right? But he's quick despite all that. Very athletic guy despite the little bit of extra weight that he carries. I mean, I think Jamal Hill is a very, very good fighter. I think he's a tough challenge for Alex Pereira. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a war. I think it's going to be a 5-round back and forth, drag him out war. And I think if I had to favor someone, I would slightly favor Pereira, but it's a dangerous fight for him.
Yeah, we'll see. Lots of good stuff coming up. Next 2-3 main events are absolutely garbage. Except, I mean, outside UFC Mexico, I'm not, in my opinion, these are not great.
Moreno Royval, I'm really looking forward to because their first fight just ended in such a bad way where Royval blew out his shoulder. And I want to see them fight again.
Rozenstruik versus Gazeev is embarrassing.
Oh, that's horrible.
I mean, you got Alex Perez and Muhammad Makhachev fighting on the card. Put them as the main event. Please. That's awesome. That's a great fight.
The UFC, they are allergic to putting flyweights in the main event, even though flyweights are just objectively much more interesting and much, much more skilled than heavyweights.
And you got Matt Schnell versus Steve Ersig opening up the main card. Why are they opening up the main card? Put them up higher. Although I will say, this dude Umar Nurmagomedov's fighting is no joke. If you've seen highlights of, what's his name? Behzat Al-Makan. The dude is not an average fighter. He is a great striker. This could be interesting for Umar, and I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park for him.
Which card is this?
Rozenstruik versus Gazeev.
Okay. What are they, like the co-man or something?
Umar? No.
Yeah. They're just, like a featured fight.
They're the second fight on the main card.
Oh, interesting.
You got Eric Anders versus Jamie Pickett. That's actually a good fight. I'm surprised Pickett hasn't been cut.
I know. He's been on quite a bit of a skid here.
Why isn't Joel Alvarez on the main card?
Man, just the fact that Shamil Gadzhiev is in a main event is just pathetic. But
how many fights has Gazeev had? Two, three?
I think I think one official UFC fight. I think the other one was a contender.
What, Martin Boudet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shows you the state of the UFC heavyweight division, and it shows you the mindset of the UFC, where they're like, we're going to put these two sloppy, terrible heavyweights in together just because heavyweights, we think heavyweights are better. You know,
I don't think Rozenstruik's bad. I think he's going to piece the dude up, honestly. But,
well, he's a great kickboxer. I mean, for sure. But
yeah, we'll see. But my voice is tired. We're going to end this. Toby, you got anything else to add?
No, I don't really remember seeing any like big news or anything. So that's about
All right. Cool. Thanks for joining us on this live stream, guys. I don't think many of you watched, but that's okay. I didn't announce anything. But we'll see you guys later. Peace out.
Peace.